This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Cradle My Heart Radio, really pleased to welcome Trent Horn to the program this time out. Trent earned a graduate degree in theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville after his conversion to the Catholic faith. He's currently an apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers, and he's pursuing a graduate degree in philosophy from Holy Apostles College. He's a regular guest on a radio program, Catholic Answers Live. And he's a lecturer who speaks across the country on issues related to the Catholic faith. And his books, Answering Atheism and Persuasive Pro-Life, are published by Catholic Answers Press. Trent, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you for having me.
I want to talk with you today about your work that led to the volume Persuasive Pro-Life. This is such a compact volume that I think is written in such a clear way that it makes the topic that for those who are unfamiliar and uncomfortable discussing abortion and the life issue, I think is really a helpful volume. So kudos to you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I spent several years traveling the country engaging in pro-life evangelism and outreach on college campuses. And so I was really motivated to take what I had learned from that experience and distill it and put it into a form that was easy for people to read and understand. And that's where Persuasive Pro-Life came from. I had been giving pro-life seminars for a long time, but there was no single book for lay people written from a Catholic perspective that I felt comfortable recommending on the subject, which is why I wrote my own, and I think it's been received very positively.
Well, and I think what is so strong about your approach is that you're defending life on the basis of human reason, not religion. So, yes, of course, it's compatible with Catholic theology. I believe it's compatible with evangelical theology, of course, and it's just compatible with reason. And I think that that's what makes it such a strong and compelling work. It's not just academic for you, though, even though, as I mentioned, you know, you are an apologist, you have a degree in theology. But there was a personal connection for you, in fact, in a kind of a deep and very personal conversation with your mother that motivated you.
That's right. In the beginning of the book, I talk about how I first learned about what abortion was when my mother told me, you know, about hers. And so as for a child, that can be very distressing. But I just knew at that time abortion was bad. But I didn't really think abortion was something I had to be involved with. I could be against it, but it wasn't my job to really do anything about it. It wasn't until the end of high school and the beginning of college that I felt more compelled that I should do something about this. And what I felt called to do was to train and equip others to talk about this issue in a compelling way. Since I felt that the only way we could change the laws of our country is to change people's hearts and minds on this issue, really one conversation at a time. And I just noticed many pro-lifers having a difficult time. They know why they're pro-life, but they have a hard time explaining that to other people without getting flustered or emotional. And so I wanted to give them some tips to be able to do that.
Sure, and we're going to share those today, maybe almost scripted out for you, if you will, with our guest Trent Horn. But Trent, I'll linger for one moment about that conversation with your mother. I want you to share some of the details, because one of the questions that we grapple with on this program is, if I had an abortion in my past, how do I tell my children? When do I tell my children? How do I have that conversation? And it seems like your mom approached it in a very straightforward way, even though some might say you were pretty young to handle that knowledge. Tell me the details of that
conversation. Yeah, I mean, I was probably in junior high, which I think is a fine time to tell a child about this. I mean, in junior high, beginning of high school, I mean, children are learning about puberty, their own bodies, about pregnancy, about how pregnancy leads to childbirth or how it can end either naturally in miscarriage or purposefully in abortion. And so it was just a very straightforward conversation. I mean, I think the issue of abortion came up and she just told me about it. I remember it being a very brief conversation, but still a very powerful one. And there were certainly emotions and tears involved. And so, I mean, I was still probably about 12 years old, so I didn't want to pry the issue anymore. it just really stuck with me that, well, this is just a bad thing. So I don't think parents should be should keep this as a secret from their children. I think it's acceptable to talk about. I think though the right age is their judgment call. I personally wouldn't do it too far before junior high. But even at junior high, each parent has to evaluate what emotional maturity level their child is at to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. And as we think about that, what I really appreciate about your approach is that your mom is somewhat in the back of your mind every time you open your mouth to speak. In other words, there's a grace that permeates what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and,
exactly.
And I think, and for me, as a woman who also has experienced abortion, I was so surprised that it was the pro-life community that embraced me first. And when I started speaking out about how abortion had harmed me, there was a pushback and a backlash from pro-choicers, a very strong one. And, and that's kind of counterintuitive. You would think that the people who promoted it to you would be supporting you afterwards, but I've not found that to be the case. And so I really, if you're new to our program, if you're new to the work of Trent Horn, I want you to hear this loud and clear. Because we stand against abortion as wrong and evil does not mean we stand against the women who have chosen it, because, Trent, we know the pressures and reasons that people choose
right.
it don't make them necessarily wrong and evil for having done so.
Right, and actually in my book, I include an entire appendix in the book on how to talk to women who are considering abortion and those who have had it to understand how to talk about such a delicate issue.
So go through just, for our listeners again, who have not personally experienced abortion or who have not talked with somebody that they know. I mean, I get that question a lot. I know my niece had an abortion. Someone wrote to me on an email recently, but she will not open up to me about it. Talk about what your tips are or what your suggestions are for helping those who have had abortions.
Yeah, well, in the book, I make it clear that when someone discloses that they are post-abortive, that it really the most important tip that I can give to someone in that conversation is just to listen and ask questions, and don't think you're going to try to solve this person's problem or help them overcome this grief in that initial conversation. This is something this person's going to be working through for their entire life, probably. And so the goal there is just for this person to know you're a safe person to talk to, just to say, to empathize, say, wow, that must have been really difficult for you, or how have you been since then? And to let them guide the conversation, use their own terms, and then just to say, well, I want to be here to help you with the different feelings you're going to be having, and recommending them to go see someone who, a professional counselor to help them through this, preferably one who has post-abortive experience, at least in counseling. Groups like Rachel's Vineyard, for example, host retreats for post-abortive men and women. And just to understand that you're dealing with someone who's gone through a major life trauma, and hardly any of us are prepared to counsel someone after a major trauma. We have to bring in people who they're really experts at this. So our role when we meet those who are post-abortive or know they are is to say, look, I'm here, I'm going to listen, I'm not going to try to solve your problem or get you to feel better. I'm here to empathize and just be an ear to hear and support, and then gently guide them towards hopefully seeking those people who can help them move through the healing process.
Hmm. Trent Horn is our guest, and we're talking about his work, Persuasive Pro-Life, and there's more in the book about how to have that difficult conversation, that delicate conversation. And, Trent, we also now want to talk about how to be persuasively pro-life. One of the things I really appreciate about your approach is that for some of us, we just feel like this is so hopelessly gridlocked. No conversation is going to have any impact. And you break that down by the fact of saying that, you know what, we're not really debating the same thing. I think it's very hopeful and encouraging the way that you frame this whole thing about the quote-unquote abortion debate.
Right. I mean, the central issue when we're talking about the issue of abortion is what are the unborn? If the unborn are not human beings, then abortion doesn't really matter very much. At least it doesn't matter when it comes to public policy. But if the unborn are human beings with the same basic rights you and I possess, then abortion can't be justified and the law should step in to protect these children. So we have to answer that question. And I find when most people talk about the issue of abortion, pro-life and pro-choice, they actually sidestep that issue. Take a common justification for abortion. Some women are very poor, and they need abortion because they can't care for their own born children. And the pro-lifer sometimes gets distracted and says, oh, well, there's adoption, and there's welfare, and there's all these other programs. And the pro-choicer disputes this, and the argument commences when we're not getting to the central issue, which is, look, we would never, if someone said, I'm going to kill my two-year-old, we'd never say, well, don't, there's adoption. We'd say, well, don't, because that's a human being. You can't kill human beings for that reason. So in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, I begin by teaching people a tool a mentor of mine created. His name is Scott Klusendorf. And the tool is called Trot Out a Toddler. It has four steps. And it basically goes like this. If someone brings up a reason to justify abortion that does not answer the question, what are the unborn, poverty, choice, even for things like rape and incest, we go through four steps. First, we agree with some kind of sentiment the person brings up. Say, you know, I would agree poverty is really difficult. This is to show we are a human being that really does care. But then we apply that reason to a two-year-old and say, well, could a mother kill her two-year-old if she lost her job? And most people will say, well, no, of course not. The third step is to say, well, why not? Ask why. And the final step is to apply it, because the person will say, well, you can't kill a two-year-old, because that's a real human being. It's born, it's living, it's breathing. And then we tie it all together. We say, ah, that's the issue. It's not about poverty. It's not about choice. It's not about these other reasons, because we would never justify killing a two-year-old for those reasons. If the unborn are just as human as a two-year-old, we shouldn't justify killing them for that reason either. And so the goal is to always get people back to that one question, what are the unborn, and for them to give us a good reason to disqualify the unborn from being considered a human being. And in my book, I show there are no such good reasons.
And you've also kind of categorized the types of arguments. You know, there are pragmatists, there are the tolerant, there are the distractors. You've already sort of hinted at some of these categories. But tell us about, I think the most common arguments that I encounter are the pragmatists. Look, abortion has always been around. People are always going to do it. There's no way that you can stop it, so you might as well contain it and make it safe for women who need it.
I would challenge two elements that I would say, well, I agree with you that you're right. Abortion has always been around, just like rape has always been around. And we'll never probably get rid of abortion, just like we'll never probably get rid of rape. But does that mean we should make abortion and rape legal because they've always been around and we can't get rid of them? Well, of course not. I mean, the idea of making abortion safe, what I often say is this. I am in favor of abortion. I have no problem with abortion if it is as safe for the child as it is for the mother. And people usually turn their heads a little when I say that. But if you think about it, I mean, abortion, we say, let's make it safe, but we can't make it safe. It is designed to end the child's life. It is a bizarre anomaly if the child survives. So, you know, that's like trying to say, well, we're going to make, you know, rape safe, that we, you know, so that men aren't clawed up and beaten up when they're trying to rape someone. Well, that's preposterous.
Goodness.
These are acts of violence against innocent people. And the law should protect innocent people by making these kind of acts illegal. So that's why we have to get back to that one question, which is, what are the unborn? If they're human, they deserve to be treated equally under the law, just like the rest of us.
You know, so many of us who had an abortion had this period of attrition where we were no longer in support of it because we knew how wrong and evil it was, but maybe because we were not healed or maybe for other reasons, we said, well, I'm against it, but I don't want to tell other people what to do. You don't have to have had an abortion to occupy that territory in the debate.
Absolutely.
The tolerant, you know. And so I think there's a huge challenge for us when someone once said to me, Trent, if parents of young women came out against abortion, you know, it would be gone. It really is not primarily, I don't think, a problem of the poor. It's a problem of the middle class trying to protect middle class futures for their daughters. I don't know.
No, that's actually correct. The abortion rate among those who are middle class and upper middle class is higher than those who live in poverty. Now, those who live in poverty tend to get more abortions. They might have more unintended pregnancies. There's a larger base of people. But when you look at the rate that a woman who actually, you're right, makes more money is more likely to choose abortion. So it's not so much about being able to have the money to care for children. It's thinking, well, I don't want a child to derail my life plans. Or the father of this baby is not going to be involved, or I don't want to be involved with the father of this baby anymore. And so that's why we have to just go back to, well, what's going on here? Is one person's lifestyle worth more than another person's life, basically? And that's why we always have to return to that one question. And when it comes to the tolerant, those who say, well, I don't like abortion, but I'm not going to take away another person's right to choose, I just ask them, well, why don't you like abortion? At the end of the day, it's because it involves killing a human life, and we should never tolerate that for unjust reasons.
Talk about the skeptics, those who just refuse to be persuaded, you know, by the medical evidence, or skeptical for other reasons.
Yeah, the skeptics are those who say, well, okay, I give you that we should treat the unborn like two-year-olds if they're both human, but nobody knows when life begins. And I often ask, well, how do you know no one knows when life begins? And they'll say, well, because people disagree. But to quote the law professor Hadley Arks, an absence of consensus is not an absence of truth. The fact that people disagree only shows that one side is wrong. It doesn't show there's no consensus. So in that chapter, I give good secular reasons to believe that human life begins at conception. And basically, I show that because the unborn are alive, they are human, and they are whole organisms after conception, or what we scientists call fertilization, they're essentially just small human beings, small human organisms. I also quote pro-choice philosophers and Supreme Court justices that affirm this truth. So the biological truth that the unborn are biological, that they're human organisms, very small human beings, members of our species, that's indisputable. The real debate is over whether they should have the same rights you and I possess. And that's a philosophical question I address in actually the next chapter of the book.
Mm-hmm. And so Trent Horn is our guest. We're talking about his work, Persuasive Pro-Life. And I hope you're feeling smarter already. I hope you're feeling more confident about that next conversation on this topic, because these are some real great nuts and bolts tools that we're discussing here. You know, Trent, again, as a woman who has had an abortion, and converted from pro-choice to pro-life, if you will, as a result of the knowledge that I gained by actually choosing it. Some people would say that, well, you already had one, so you're disqualified from having an opinion. I've actually heard that pretzel logic from pro-choicers who say, sure, you had your abortion. Now you just want to, you know, limit everybody else's choices. And that's stunning to me when their whole position is supposed to be about giving women choice. There are many ways that people will try to disqualify you for having the opinion you have. I don't think, you know, being post-abortive is probably the most common one. More commonly, it's that you're a man, right?
Oh, yes. I was actually in a debate with a women's studies professor who used that in the debate and said she didn't mean to be sexist, but I am a man. And in my rebuttal, I simply said, well, that actually is sexist because people of different sexes can have opinions on things that don't affect them. For example, I said that my female opponent was allowed to have the opinion that a military draft is wrong, even though she would never be drafted. Or for example, you could have the opinion that child abuse is wrong, even if you are neither a parent nor a child yourself. So just because an injustice doesn't affect us, that doesn't mean we have no right to have an opinion about it. If men aren't allowed to have an opinion on abortion, then that means Roe versus Wade has to be overturned because it was decided by 9 male Supreme Court justices, 7 who voted for it. So what this objection really means when they say, well, you're a man, what they mean is men should not be allowed to be against abortion, because there are many, many men who are in favor of legal abortion. In fact, men are more likely to be in favor of abortion than women. So that objection, it's so self-serving that they don't get mad at pro-choice men. It's just a way to try to shut up male pro-lifers. And that's where I try to call them out and say, look, let's talk about the argument, not the sex of the person making the argument.
Mm-hmm. Well, and rightly calling it what it is. That's sexism.
Right, exactly.
Period.
It's saying because of my sex, my opinion doesn't matter. Which, if we did that for women on any other issue, it would be called out, rightly so.
Well, and so let's deal with sort of the subset of one of the problems that we have, I think, sometimes in persuading people to the position on life, which is some people will acknowledge everything that we've been discussing, but they'll say, but because it affects a woman for 9 months of her life, including her bodily, you know, integrity, she has to have the right to decide. They will throw reason out the window and just become irrational on that basis and say, nope, it's something that's a special thing, and because it affects her so deeply, she, you know, that it's her choice. How do you combat it when things go down the irrational
Well, I just try. If someone's going to be completely irrational, then you just may have to let the conversation go. But I try to get other things for them to think about. One, I sometimes like to ask, do you think men should be compelled to pay child support even if they never intended to be a parent? And most people agree that a man should pay child support. And that's going to affect him far longer in his life than a 9-month pregnancy will affect a woman, that he'll be making financial obligations for the next 18 years. And we say to him, even if you don't want to be a parent, you're responsible for these children that have come into existence, so you have to care for them. So I'm just going to say, if men are responsible for the children they create, even if it causes hardship for them, we still expect them to provide for these children financially and socially. Why not expect the mothers to provide for these children with the organ in their own body that is designed to sustain these children? That in these arguments, some people say, well, you would never force a parent to give a kidney to their child. And I'd say, well, that's different. The kidney is made to filter my own blood. It's heroic if I give it to someone else. But what is the uterus for, if not sustaining the life of an unborn child? Abortion is not like refusing to selflessly give my kidney to save someone's life. It's more like giving my kidney to someone and then violently taking it back and ending their life in the process. So I talk about that in a chapter in my book called The Autonomist, where after I show the unborn are human, have a right to live, I address these kind of last-ditch arguments that try to say, well, it doesn't matter if it's a baby, it's still my choice, my body, my choice. And I go through a lot more in the book for your listeners to learn how to deal with those arguments.
And I think this is we're coming to the close of our time. We could speak for hours, so I appreciate, again, you joining us here on Cradle My Heart Radio. But when it comes down to it, you've hit on something that I think is so important that I really want to underline it and maybe even make this our conclusion, which is women have a moral responsibility to our children. You know, and as someone who has served in post-abortion ministry for over a decade, this is the crisis in the aftermath, is the woman understands that she has failed in her moral obligation to her child. Now, not every woman chooses to do so willingly, but yet women feel this, that they were the last line of defense. Even if they were coerced, they failed in a moral responsibility to protect the life of the child. How can we best use this truth to persuade and to win hearts and minds, Trent?
I find that when I was in front of abortion facilities, praying and then dialoguing with those who were going in, I would often, if I had the chance to talk to them, I would ask them, look, you are a father, you are a mother. This isn't about whether I can be a mother or I can be a father. You are one right now. And to say to others when they talk about abortion, to use terms like when the mother decides this instead of, you know, when the woman decides this. And those who are going into these facilities, I would say, well, look, you have a choice today. You are either going to be the mother or father of a living child or a dead child. And one of those choices is those are both difficult, but only one of them is going to haunt you. Which one are you going to make from that, basically? And so I would just say to empower them, say, look, you can be a hero today. You can be the person who can be there for your child, even if your parents weren't there for you, to believe in someone, that we're all made in God's image. And so we have that heroic grace to be mothers and fathers, just as, you know, God is our father and cares for us. And just to tell people they can do it and to help keep them away from the evil one who tells them they can't.
Trent, thank you so much for joining us. We are out of time, but we really appreciate you shedding the light on your work, Persuasive Pro-Life. Thanks for being our guest on Cradle My Heart Radio.
No problem.
Trent Horn holds a master's degree in theology from the Franciscan University of Steubenville and currently serves as a staff apologist for Catholic Answers. We've got a link to his organization at our website at cradlemyheart.org to learn more. Stay with us. Coming up, we'll discuss how to be more persuasive in your thinking and speaking about the issue of life, and we'll look at some of the top stories this week concerning the life issue in the news. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us here at Cradle My Heart Radio. We are so pleased to have you along for this broadcast and the live portion, which means you get a chance to weigh in and join the conversation. 800-811-3003 is our number, so you can call us toll-free. And I would love to hear your reaction to our conversation with Trent Horn as he so incisively lays out not only the arguments to be persuasive in your pro-life view, but also he just gave a great portrait there, if you were able to hear the interview at the first half of this broadcast, about what the mindset is for those who do not have a pro-life worldview, for those who feel as though women's rights are more important than honoring life and choosing life for the unborn. And I just felt as though his conversation tonight was so useful and so helpful and so equipping for us. You know, when I changed my point of view, it was a process over time. And I'd love to hear from you if you have changed your point of view one way or the other. I don't think that I've ever, by the way, met anyone who began believing that all life is sacred and that we should err on the side of possible life, even if we are, in your mind, uncertain that a child is a full human being from conception. We should err on the side of that being a possibility and protect that life rather than make the mistake and say that it isn't if it is. Anyway, I've never heard anybody go from having a pro-life worldview to becoming pro-choice. Now, there was someone in politics recently who said that hearing the stories of women who felt they needed abortions persuaded him that the law needed to be upheld. Maybe you know this politician I'm talking about. I don't want to go down that side road onto politics. Other than that very public sway, which I don't know how heartfelt it really is since politics are involved there, I can't judge that, but I've never in my personal conversations or my other reading encountered anyone who has gone the other way. I know many people, on the other hand, who were pro-choice, who thought that abortion was a morally neutral decision, that women had difficult circumstances, needed to make it, and then either after making the choice or after learning more about the reality that children are full human beings from conception forward, change to become pro-life. Did you change your view? Has your view evolved over time? 800-811-3003 is our number. And maybe you can talk about what persuaded you. For me, I knew that abortion was wrong after I chose it. It was a desperate choice, and once the decision was made, I stopped thinking about it in terms of it being right or wrong. God, in His providence, came and ministered to my heart to tell me that it was wrong right before it happened. But I didn't have the wherewithal to act upon that knowledge, that supernatural knowledge that God had given me into my heart. And so walking out the aftermath, I knew that I had done something terribly wrong. And as I said in the interview with Trent Horn, I knew that I had failed in my moral obligation to my child, a weak and defenseless human being. Each of us has a moral obligation to defend the weak. So my viewpoint, though, didn't change until my healing came. So for a lot of years, you know, I said, well, I'm not in favor of abortion, but I can't tell other people what to do. Or I made other accommodations and justifications. And I now have become persuaded that children deserve protection no matter what the circumstances of their conception may have been. So, yes, I'm pro-life in the case of rape and incest as well. And you know this if you listen to this program regularly. And that view is informed by careful reading of God's Word, but also from stories, hearing from women who had the devastation of a rape and then chose abortion and did not feel better. Also hearing from women who were conceived in rape. And as Rebecca Kiesling said, I wasn't born because I was wanted. I was born because I was protected. Her mother conceived in rape before Roe versus Wade made abortion legal. And so Rebecca concedes the point that, yes, her mother had a forced pregnancy. The state forced her to give birth. Her mother, that is. But as Rebecca said, I was born because I was protected. This is the role of society, is to protect the weak and the vulnerable. But I didn't always feel that way. It's been a long journey for me to get to this point, and many people who have helped me in my thinking have persuaded me, I guess because I was open to persuasion at some point after my healing, is really the point of demarcation, if you will. 800-811-3003. And by healing, what I mean is that I was able to come to the Lord and say without excuse that what I did was wrong and that I deserved the harshest punishment possible for it, and that I was so grateful that He had taken that punishment upon Himself for me. Every time I think of that moment when I understood what He had done for me, my heart becomes so tender because it was so undeserved. That's what makes it merciful. Afterwards, I couldn't help but say, yes, Lord, You were right. You are right. We need to trust You in all circumstances. I know many people who don't have a strong religious faith who are pro-life. I'm not saying you can't be pro-life without faith in Jesus Christ, but I just wonder about your journey. Where do you stand today, and if it represents a change? 800-811-3003 is our number. 800-811-3003. Our phones are open here for this live portion of Cradle My Heart Radio tonight. I'm Kim Cotola. You can visit us online at cradlemyheart.org and learn more about our guest. If you weren't able to hear the interview, we always will post those as podcasts the week following. And, you know, this is the thing that I find so interesting about our changing views. It was in the news this week that chimpanzees were granted rights of personhood in New York. That's a first in U.S. history. Now, we've had animals be granted property rights. You remember, famously, Leona Helmsley left her estate to her dog. Was that an act of spite toward her loved ones? Or, well, we'll never know. But we know that the dog was allowed to inherit her estate. But for the first time in our history, a New York judge ruled that the writ of habeas corpus, which allows humans to challenge their imprisonment applied to two chimpanzees, which are being held for research at a Long Island university. And the decision could be a first step towards broader recognition in the U.S. of the legal personhood of apes and other animals. And by the way, just this language that's being used in the news reporting, that the animals are being held for research, presumably against their will. I don't know that an animal could voluntarily sign up for a research project, but the chimpanzees in question are a part of a four chimpanzee group, and there's been a group that has been lobbying for their protection for a number of years, and now the judge, this April 7th, I think, is when the ruling came down. New York Supreme Court Justice Barbara Jaffe, oh, actually, I'm sorry, it was this week, not April 7th, so it would have been on, let's see, it would have been April 22nd. She amended her original order, striking the words writ of habeas corpus from the ruling. By the way, that has to do with their right to, you know, to protest your imprisonment. And while the chimpanzees may still get legal representation in court, their personhood is not up for debate at the moment, according to the Washington Post. So I don't know if that's because there was a hue and cry about the absurdity of calling chimpanzees persons. But, you know, the spirit of why this thing happened was not so that chimpanzees can be enfranchised for the vote or other things that we associate with rights. No, it was because they could be, if they were granted rights, they could be prevented, that is, from suffering abuse and slaughter. And as soon as you put it in those terms, you begin to understand why we would be discussing this when we start talking about the issue of life. The reason that this judge has made this ruling is not because she woke up one morning dreaming of chimpanzees having equal rights with humans. No, it's because someone fought on behalf of the chimpanzees. The Animal Legal Defense Fund has been in this fight for the recognition of animal rights, which began in the 1970s and has since evolved into its own field in law, legal education, and activism. And they envision a world in which the lives and interests of all sentient beings, it's really an important phrase in their worldview, sentient meaning they can feel and they can sense, that all sentient beings are respected within the legal system and that animals are not exploited, terrorized, tortured, or controlled to serve human whims or purposes. Joyce Titchler is co-founder and former executive director of the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and she's been writing about the case in the Stanford Journal of Animal Law and Policy. And it's an idea that may be confusing for some, it may seem absurd to some on its face, but acknowledging the legal rights of animals does not make them equal to people, for instance. The experts say no. In discussing the Declaration of Rights of Cetaceans, which are whales, porpoises, and dolphins, which was first drafted at the 2012 meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences, Scientific American noted that the idea of granting personhood rights to non-humans would not make them equal to humans. They would not vote, sit on a jury, attend public school. However, by legally making whales and dolphins non-human persons, in that case, with individual rights under the law, it would obligate government to protect cetaceans from slaughter or abuse. There's some great reporting on this, by the way, in the Christian Science Monitor, and we've got that story up on our Facebook page at cradlemyheart.com. Facebook.com/cradlemyheart. Check there if you want to learn more about this, or if you've already read about it this week and would like to weigh in, our phones are open. 1-800-811-3003. Let's go to the phones, and let's welcome in Terry to the program. Hi, Terry. Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hi, Kim. Appreciate your work on behalf of so many. I just had wanted to make an observation. I'm a grandmother and have spent a lot of years ministering to and loving women who have made the decision to have an abortion and been involved with Rachel's Vineyard and so forth. But I wanted to just bring to your attention, I'm sure you know this, but I think it's an interesting statistic. Very often at a coffee house, if I'm sitting and having a cup of coffee and strike up a conversation with a younger woman, I use it as an opportunity to kind of wiggle into their lives, and sometime we'll discover that they have been post-abortive and can help get them to Rachel Vineyard or another healing ministry. But I'm astounded at the numbers of women who do not know the statistics of the of their, and you can concur, tell me if this is correct, but I believe that if you put 100 women together in a room, about 30%, 33% of those women will have had an abortion.
That's a statistic that I'm familiar with as well, but I think you're right. Very few people know it. And I think that, you know, those of us who have had abortions, Terry, I had very mixed feelings when I learned that, because on the one hand, I was shocked because I really believed that I was one of very few who had made that decision. Everything happened in such isolation for me, and then there was so much shame that I never discussed it with anyone and so on. But I was also surprised that so many people I imagined would be suffering as I was, in silence. And so I really applaud the work that's being done at Rachel's Vineyard. And I agree with you, though, that more people need to know how widespread the problem really is. Thank you, Terry, for your call. Phones are open tonight, 800-811-3003. We're talking about granting personhood rights to chimpanzees when we're arguing at many state levels in the legislatures whether or not we should declare unborn humans persons. It's an interesting crossroads for our culture, isn't it? And we're also talking about, you know, well, if you're not persuaded that the unborn life should be granted the rights of personhood so that they could be protected, have your views on this changed? 800-811-3003. Have your views on it changed either way? Are you more inclined to say, you know what, there are so many difficult circumstances, the law should not be involved in this. This really is a personal matter for women. Or are you now persuaded that the unborn are fully human and deserve protection? 800-811-3003. We'd love to hear how your view has evolved. Join us for the conversation here at Cradle My Heart Radio, back after this short break.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Phones are open tonight. We are on this live portion of the broadcast talking about how to be persuasive in your pro-life conversations. And if you missed our featured interview, Trent Horn was our guest. Persuasive Pro-Life is the title of his book. And please go and find the podcast at cradlemyheart.org when we have it posted later this week. You know, one of the things that I think Trent did so beautifully was to outline the objections that people will give as we try to have conversations about the life issue. And I think at one point, all of his categories probably described me. I was tolerant for a while. I was a pragmatist. I disqualified people by saying that they shouldn't have an opinion on it. I was an autonomist, saying, no, you just have to let women make this decision for themselves. At this point, my viewpoint has changed entirely from where it was, 360 degrees from even 15 years ago. But since that time, the more that I think about the issue, the more I am completely persuaded that the unborn deserve our protection. How about you? Has your view changed? 800-811-3003. Rhonda, thanks for holding through the break. Go ahead, please. You're with us here live on Cradle My Heart Radio. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Kim. I just wanted to say that my views changed. As a teenager in high school, when it was rumored that one of our classmates had had an abortion, my immediate thought was, how is somebody going to kill their baby? But then when I found myself in that unplanned pregnancy situation, being in college, I guess, you know, more education. Oh, no one knows when life begins. I was like, oh, it's not a baby yet. And so I chose to have an abortion. But shortly after that, I felt the pain of what I'd done and realized I've killed my baby. And from that point on, whenever I would meet someone and they were in that situation wanting to know I'm pregnant, you know, what should I do, I always said, don't do it. And I was able to share, you know, just the pain that I experienced and realizing that, you know, it was a baby. So I guess I swung one way, you know, saying, oh, it's wrong, then, okay, it's okay to do. But now, definitely pro-life. And I enjoyed your guest tonight, just hearing the being more empowered to help people understand why abortion is morally wrong. And I actually had an opportunity to apply some of those, that strategy this past week. I have a training from Genocide Awareness Project. They came to Fayetteville State University, and we did a training that night using the Trot Out a Toddler, and I actually was able to use it when I talked to a college student last week. So when I heard him tonight, I was so excited. It's like, wow, I just did that. And so now I feel so empowered, not just with my own experience for why not have an abortion, but also the morality of it, that the unborn has a right to life as well, and then be able to articulate in a way that I didn't before. So I was just so excited when I heard him on tonight.
Awesome. I love how you said that you knew it in your heart. I'm not sure you used those words, but you knew it in your heart that it was a baby. Then you got educated that it wasn't, and that fit with what your desires wanted. Interesting journey, Rhonda. Thank you for calling. Good to have you listening tonight. I really appreciate that, and I'm glad to hear that Trot Out a Toddler is a practical practical way to approach it. Let's go next to Tim. And Tim, you want to talk about the role of men in having opinions on this issue. Tell me about your journey and how you came to your position today. Hi, Tim. Welcome to Cradle My Heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say, like, I came from a faith-based background, and I started very pro-life. And as I've grown into a young adult, I'm still very personally pro-life, but I feel like as a man, I can't really tell a woman what she can and can't do with her body, because I'll never understand the journey a woman goes through during pregnancy. And I find it difficult to consolidate my opinions with their experience.
Would you say that that would be true if you were married to a woman? That you would have no say about
her? I think it would be. I think I would have as much trouble telling my wife what to do, even though it would be my child, than I would. I don't know what the female experience with a child is like. So I find it difficult for myself personally, even though I would never advocate for the termination of a pregnancy. I can't bring myself to tell someone, I am going to tell you what to do with this experience I can never have.
Well, Tim, I don't know. I mean, I would love to let our listeners respond to what you've said here, because our time is very short, though. But I think it's really apt to think about what Trent Horn said about trotting out a toddler. I mean, would you say the same is true if a woman came to you and said, I'm a mother, a single mother, but I can't care for my two-year-old, so I'm going to do away with the child's life? Would you say, I don't know what it's like to be a single mother, so that's okay, that's what you should do?
No, obviously I wouldn't, but at the same time, there's a difference between single parenthood and pregnancy, and like I said, I would never advocate for this act ever. That's not what I would do at all. I'm just not comfortable openly expressing that I advocate someone doing something I will never experience.
Sure. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate you joining us, and thank you for sharing your view on it. And I hope that you'll pray and continue to think about what you've heard tonight, especially from our interview guest. We have an anonymous caller, and I understand that you have a tender story to share, and I'm going to ask you if you can just say hello to me and agree to weigh in with us next week. Hi, caller. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
I'd like to talk with you off the air because it sounds like you have a lot to share, and we have only less than 2 minutes remaining. But will you stay on the air? Stay on the line so I can talk with you after we go off the air.
Sure. Could I just say one thing?
Please, we have about a minute to give you. Go ahead.
On the air.
Yes, go ahead.
I appreciate what Tim is saying, but. The choice is always there. You have a right to choose what you do every day of every moment. But just because you have that choice does not mean that it's right. So if I shoot my neighbor, or I shoot my 16-year-old, or I abort my baby, it's all a choice. It doesn't make it right just because it's a choice.
All right. Thank you. Stay on the air, please, because we're out of time. Join us next week here at Cradle My Heart. We will continue this conversation. Thank you so much for all of our callers.